You're listening to Small and Mighty Conversations, a podcast celebrating and supporting the small business owner and creative entrepreneur. With your host, me, Sam Burgess. You're listening to Season 3, Episode 10. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the last episode of season 3 of Small and Mighty Conversations. I can't believe we're at episode 10. There'll only be a short break before season 4 starts. I'm not sure quite how long, but keep an eye on your subscriptions. And if you are not already on my mailing list, then definitely sign up to that so you will be notified when the new season goes live. Or, of course, you can follow me on Instagram at SamBurgessUK. Today, I am speaking with member of the Co, so the Small and Mighty Co, is Elizabeth Stiles. She is a fashion brand consultant. Elizabeth and I have known each other a little while. Before Elizabeth became a brand consultant, she'll share her journey, but she also had a stationery brand called Hello Stationery, and that was how Elizabeth and I met, as she came along to one of my Instagram workshops, and we just kind of got chatting, and it went from there, really. But today, Elizabeth is talking all about her role as a fashion brand consultant and her top tips for fashion brands, emerging fashion brands, new fashion brands, existing fashion brands, how she works with fashion brands, and how she can help you really grow your business, as well as her top tips around ethical businesses, as that is a real thing that's going on at the moment, if you didn't know. You know, Blue Planet and all of that, and Stacey Dooley and her documentary on BBC Three. It's a really big thing at the moment. Elizabeth and I talk a little bit about how you can make your brand more ethical, as well as lots of other things. So before we get to the episode, I just wanted to let you know that there are a handful of tickets left for my workshop on the 2nd of May in South Kensington. I have two Instagram workshops, how to build your brand on Instagram and Instagram stories. These will be the last workshops I'll be running for a few months now. So if you are interested in coming along, then do snap up a ticket. The link is in the show notes, or you can head to smallandmighty.co/workshops to grab yourself a ticket. They have been super, super popular in the past, and everybody loves them, and they're suitable for product and service businesses alike. You can do both the morning and the afternoon session, or just one of them. But let's get on with the show. Hi, Elizabeth. Welcome to Small and Mighty Conversations.
Hi, Sam. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. I'm super excited to have you on the show, as you are one of the Small and Mighty Co's, which is super exciting. And I'm really keen for you to kind of tell everybody a little bit about how you got into what you do now, and to kind of share your wisdom around how you work with clients. So to kind of kick off, would you like to introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yeah, so I'm Elizabeth. I'm a fashion brand consultant, which means I work with independent brands and give them the opportunity to get their ideas from inside their head and into production, basically, in one sentence, if that was my elevator pitch. I work with a lot of creative people, obviously, mm-hmm. and designers. And it might be that they've not started a brand yet and they want some help to actually know where to start sometimes.
Okay.
Or sometimes that they have started but they've got stuck along the way. Mm-hmm. Whether it's, I don't know, they're like in a creative rut, or they've got stuck with their costings, or they have had a fallout with their manufacturer and they need some help to find a new one. There's lots of different things that I help people with a brand, literally everything to get it from paper to production, mm-hmm. but only with fashion brands. So that it's like quite broad, but that's my niche, is in fashion.
And why, how have you ended up doing what you do?
Well, I have always loved clothes. I remember asking my mum when I was like 4 or 5 if I could choose my own clothes, and she was like, absolutely not. And then I studied textiles. I always knew that I wanted to be in fashion. It's just one of those things that was ingrained into me, and I feel very lucky that I was one of those people that knew what they wanted to do, because mm-hmm. I know not everyone has that.
Definitely.
And so I just knew that I was going to go and study fashion at uni, but I didn't really know that what it could be if it wasn't fashion design.
Yeah.
Like, what else is out there that, you know, can you work in fashion if you're not a designer? And I felt a bit conflicted with that. So I was listening to Catherine actually on your podcast before.
Yeah.
And my story is quite similar to hers, in the fact that I stumbled across fashion buying And I knew that there was this course, and nobody had actually graduated from this fashion buying course when I applied for it. It was like a brand new course.
Ooh.
So I was, again, very lucky in the support that my family had, you know, that they said, yeah, just go for it. That's what you want to do. So I did. And I was there for 3 years, and they had very good links with like the brands in the Midlands, because I went to Leicester, De Montfort Uni.
Mm-hmm.
So around there, you've got like Asda, Sainsbury's and Next. And in my final year, the Next held a competition with the university to say to create a range of clothing that we don't have in store already.
Okay.
And I did a little black dress collection. So, but it was like through the years. Mm-hmm. So I did a 20 style black dress, a 30 style, 40 style, 50 style, 60 style, named them after all my friends.
Love it.
And won the competition.
Ah, that's amazing.
Yay! And I've still got it somewhere in a box. I need to dig it out. And they said, oh, the prize is to win some work experience at Next. And they said, actually, we just really need somebody to help us out. So do you want a job? Yeah, sure. You know, that's the dream when you come out of uni, is to find a paid work.
Yeah.
But the thing is, was my whole life was down south. And I'd kind of said to my family and my boyfriend, like, yeah, I'll be home when I graduate. And then I was like, actually, I'm going to stay up here for a little bit longer. Sorry. I was like, I'll just stay for a year. You know, I'll just get my training and then come back down to London. Mm-hmm. And I ended up staying there for about 5 years on their women's
wow.
team.
Okay.
Yeah. But I think it was good, in disguise, because obviously when you're starting in a really competitive job like that, you need to prove your worth and prove the fact that you're there. So I could stay until like 9, 10 at night, not worrying about having to get home for anybody, because I lived on my own.
Mm-hmm.
So I managed to sort of like push my way through, because I could work really hard, you know, like, and then I'd just go home and relax at the weekend.
And buying is very competitive, like any kind
yeah.
of buying, especially I having worked in retail head offices, I know how competitive buying is. You've got to put the hours in order for you to progress up the ladder. So I guess it kind of worked well for you not having kind of the boyfriend to go home to and stuff, that you could
yeah.
just really put your head down and just crack on with what needs to be done to get up the ladder.
Yeah, for sure. And then everyone was lovely as well. Like, I absolutely loved working there. Sometimes I think I wonder if I'd still be there if it was down here.
Yeah.
Because I really did enjoy it. But then I get itchy feet. So
okay.
maybe I wouldn't have done. I then went to Arcadia, which, mm-hmm. as we both know,
yep.
is the dream of working in fashion.
Yep. it's I've always used the description that it's like when you really, really fancy a boy at school and then you eventually go out with him and you're like, huh, he's really not all that.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I was sort of sat in reception thinking that I've made it.
Yep.
My career is like at its peak. And then, I mean, by lunchtime that day, I knew I'd made a massive mistake. It was just not the same working environment that I was used to. It was just completely different, like a shock to the system. But I was only on a maternity cover contract there, so I had an out, so I only stayed there for a year. And it was really funny, on the last day, they were like, we're really sorry we can't keep you on because the girl that's replacing you is coming back and we just don't have the budget to keep you on. I was like, that's fine.
I'm devastated.
And they were like, it means you won't have a job. I was like, that's fine.
For those for the listeners, I'm just going to clarify, both Elizabeth and I have worked at Arcadia. We didn't actually work there at the same time. Elizabeth joined about 2 months after I left, and we weren't in the same part of Arcadia, because for those of you who don't know, Arcadia has lots of different brands, and I worked for Arcadia. You worked for Miss Selfridge?
Selfridge, yeah.
Yeah, so
which is, I've heard since, was the worst one. So that gave me a very, very thick
Yeah, I knew that.
If anything. Yeah. Maybe it was you that
probably.
Yeah. And I say that I never regret going there, because I learned so much about my, like, I sound a bit deep, but like myself as a person, like, I became very resilient. Mm-hmm. About how to treat people in the working environment.
How not to treat people in the working environment.
That's more to the point, yeah. I learned a lot there. So that was just a year. And then on my last day there on the train home, I got the call to say about the next job that I got was at mm-hmm. Asda. So I was like, oh, cool. out of work for approximately an hour.
That's great.
And it all worked out, yeah. So then I went on to be a boys wear team. Like, so I managed the jersey wear team for Asda boys wear. So it's something like £20 million or something
crazy.
Ridiculous. But the amount of money that you've got to manage, you've got to put it back to the back of your head. Mm. If you let that rule your decisions, you're just
paralyzed.
So, yeah, it kind of stunts your creativity a little bit. But it was a really fun job again, back up north, out of London. I was very happy.
Yep.
And again, I loved it. But then it worked in retail. People are always surprised that not everything is designed in-house. You have suppliers who design for you. And I had a supplier who asked me to go and work for him. So I was quite happy, but my boyfriend was like, just go and meet him anyway and see what he's got to say, because he sounds like he's quite keen. And I went and met him for a drink in London. And obviously I'd been scarred by London from having worked at Arcadia. He was so, like, really cool guy, very relaxed. Office, and it was a pay rise as well, so I took it and went back down to London. So I was even, like, yo-yoing up and down from London to Leicester for like 8 years by this point. And it was nice to see the other side of retail. So where I've always been buying, I was now selling into the buyers. And from having been a buyer, you know how to treat them, you know how to speak to them, you know what they need. Like, you know that you don't phone them on a Monday because they have their trade meeting. You know that to get their costings and their samples in time for their sign-off. So he always hired buyers to be the supplier manager.
Perfect.
Which is quite a clever
thing
to do.
Very clever, because you, and plus, I suppose you can talk more knowledgeably with buyers and build rapport much quicker because you've been on that side.
Yeah, and like show empathy to them. And like, I've been there, I get it. The hardest part was being at the receiving end. Like, obviously you go from being the one who's asking for everything to being the one who's got to get it done. So it's a bit of a knock to the pride.
Yeah.
You know, you've just got to suck it up, and then you're in customer services at the end of the day. So it's a real turn, but I did really, really enjoy that. It's much more relaxed way of working. And then when I was there, they started a brand, this supplier. I was the manager of launching the brand with some of the designers, and there was only about four of us that started it, but it was so hard. Like, we were doing everything, you know. We had a company helping us with social and the website, but apart from that, we did everything. And it was there that I thought, this is really hard, and we know how to do everything. And what about the people who don't know how to do everything that are starting brands? You know, they might be photographers or stylists, or so they know how to make something look nice, but they don't know how to make it. And I put in my WhatsApp group one night, if you were to start a brand, where would you start? And one of them said Instagram. And I was like, what would you put on Instagram? You haven't not made anything. And they were like, oh, yeah. And I thought, no, this is good, because people don't know how to make clothes, really. Like, nobody really knows how stuff gets onto the shop floor in detail, unless you've seen it go from the paper onto the shop floor, all the steps, hundreds and hundreds of steps. And all the things that could go wrong as well, more importantly, because those things can cost you a lot of money. Then I put some messages out into Facebook groups saying, I think I might have put one in yours, actually. I did about two or three.
Saying, I think you did.
Yeah, this is my experience. If you want to have a chat, let me know. And I got quite a few responses. And I was like, you know, I won't charge. I just want to hear what people are struggling with, because I, like, not in a big-headed way, but I know everything. So what don't you know, sort of thing, and I'll figure out if I can help you. And some things I could help them with and some things I couldn't, but the people who I couldn't help, I knew somebody who could. So it was good, and it gave me a bit of confidence that I could answer their questions. And so I just thought, I think I could make some money from this. I genuinely think that I could help people and earn a salary at the same time and have more flexibility. And, you know, it was a very young office that I was working in. And in 8 years' time, I'm going to be 40. And I thought, I cannot be working this office when I'm 40. I'll be so old. I need a get out plan. And I was like, maybe this could be my get out plan. And I don't live in London either. I was doing like a 3 hour commute every day.
Oof.
Yeah.
Grueling.
I mean, like an hour and a half in, an hour and a half out, not like
yeah.
6 hours a day.
No, that'd be crazy.
Yeah. Again, I was just like, as I'm getting, like, not old, but like as I'm getting older, I don't want to be doing that anymore. So there was all these like life decisions that kind of went into it as well. So it was in June that I kind of had this realization that I thought, I kind of want to leave in September, because September is when everyone starts looking for help to rejuvenate their business, and you have that back to school feeling. But I was on a 3 month notice period, and I was like, oh, that's 3 months from now, that means I have to hand it in right now. And that was really scary, but I thought, well, I've got 3 months to plan for it then, and it's over the summer, you know, it will be like long days, it's quite a nice time to start planning and get my head in gear. So I started downloading podcasts, like audiobooks, absolutely everything, and I had this little book in my bag, and I would just write every idea down that came into my head. And
what audiobooks did you listen to and podcasts to kind of help you get ready for starting a business?
What didn't I listen to?
Oh, bless you.
Like, I listened to so many things. One of them, it's really, really cheesy, but it's Carrie Green, She Means Business.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was really good to learn how, because I'd only ever been in product-based businesses before, it was good to learn how to run a service-based business. So I'd say that really helped. And it's like super basic, but it was good that it was basic, you know. Like,
yes.
Took it real back to basics. And what else was there? Life in Half a Second. I really enjoyed that, about sort of finding inspiration. The Secret, obviously.
Obviously, naturally. We talk about The Secret. Everybody loves The Secret. I love The Secret.
Yeah.
It's so good.
I listened to your podcast, you know. I heard so many other people that were doing really well, and like women that were earning money for themselves was quite inspiring, you know. You don't hear that many stories on the whole. I mean, obviously you do now, but up until then, I think there's been a huge shift in the past year, or maybe my attention has been more focused on
definitely.
It, I don't know, one or the other.
No, I think it will probably, your attention has been more focused on it, but there has definitely been a shift in the last year. You know, there has been a big boom in people, especially women, starting more businesses and more podcasting, and there's been a real shift in general, so it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, and the more people you see do it, the more confidence it gives you that you can do it, and you think, yeah. And just hanging out with people that are doing it as well, because although your friends are your friends and you love them, then, you know, if they're not doing it, it's really hard for them to understand. So I was like, I'm just going to make a conscious decision that to keep my friends as my friends and just talk about makeup or whatever it might be that you want to talk about with them, or current affairs or Big Brother or whatever crap's on TV. But I'm going to find myself some new friends that I can just talk business about. And I probably was through you that I found them, you know, like Charlotte from Media Luck. Mm-hmm. She helped me write all my website copy. And it's funny, I gave her my little notebooks of all the things I'd written down. I was like, I need you to put this into some sort of order. It's just all my brain working. And she looked at them and she was like, these all say the same thing. You've just written the same thing over and over and over again. I was like, okay, well, that's good.
That's your mission right there.
I did it again the other day, and it's exactly the same. It's just to equip creatives to bring their ideas to life, give them the confidence and practical knowledge to be financially independent using their creativity. And it was the fact that you can be financially independent and creative, like combining those two things, I feel like isn't always shouted about. And it is possible, like you can make good money in fashion. Like I get a lot of messages from people being like, oh, my parents didn't let me study fashion, it wasn't like a job. And I was thinking, God, you know, you might even be earning more money than what you are now if you'd actually gone into fashion. Like, it does pay well, but I think sometimes our generation or our parents' generation, people are like, oh, it's a silly job.
Well, yeah, I mean, I wanted to be an actress and my parents didn't
support
my dreams.
I know, and like, how much money can you make as an actress? Oh my God, you know.
I could have been like super famous by now. I could be like a Hollywood actress. I mean, I was offered a partial scholarship to Italia Conti and my parents wouldn't stump up the rest of it. And so that was the end of my dream. I know, yeah. My moment may come.
I think that was it really, that I just wanted to be able to tell people. That was almost like my mission. I want to tell people you can be in fashion and make money and I'll help you do it. And that's it.
So now you've started the business and you've been doing this full time since mm-hmm. September, since you left your last job. Tell me a little bit about how you work with clients and, like, I guess, where the clients that come to you, where are they in their business journey? Like, are they at that very kind of initial, I'd like to start a fashion brand, help me? Or are they, I've got a fashion brand, I just need some help? Like, just tell us a little bit about how you work with clients.
They're both, really. I work with both. So some, I'd probably say like a third of my clients haven't launched and 2/3 have. They are small brands. Some people have started hand making everything and they've got to a point where they're so busy that they need to outsource it to a manufacturer and they're terrified of handing their baby over to somebody and paying somebody to take their baby away from them. It's just also, it doesn't feel natural to them. And sort of working through that process of helping somebody find a manufacturer is probably the main thing that I get asked about the most, because it's such a grey area. The one thing I try and say to people is, I won't go and find you a manufacturer, I'll help you find one. Because it's almost like dating. I wouldn't go out and find your husband, but I could help you go and find husband, you know, make you understand what you want in somebody. But I wouldn't just go marry that person, because in theory, your business is going to last forever, you know, if it's going to be a success. And you only really want to search for a manufacturer once, worst case twice, but you know, you only want to be doing this once, so you want to do it right. And somebody that, I mean, I've done it at trade shows with a friend. I'll go round at work and we'll be like, oh, he was hilarious. And she was like, what? He was mental. And then that's the example that you have. I liked him, she didn't. So that's why I don't necessarily recommend people directly. But there's like trade shows you can go to, and I'll go with you to the trade shows and make sure that you're answering all the questions like with confidence. Or I might go to a factory with you and develop a whole range. We might go to the shops together and like get some inspiration and actually pull the range together, and almost like asking the questions to drag the ideas out of your head and onto paper. Or some people have got too many ideas and they need them narrowing down, which happens a lot, because that's the fun bit, you know, you want to do everything, but you're not going to make any money if you do everything. You've got to make it really concise and have a really clear message as well. You've got to know who your customer is. Some people have been going for like 3 years and have no idea who their customer is, which always surprises me. But sometimes their customer changes as well.
It's always worrying.
And they're like, oh, I started off doing this, but now my brand looks like this. So they just need to kind of reevaluate where they're at and where they want to take it. And a lot of people just say to me, like, it's just nice to talk to somebody who gets it. Like, they might talk to their mum and she's very nice, very supportive. She'll like stroke your hair and be like, you're doing a really good job. And you're like, yes.
I'm so proud of you.
But I really need some help, and like help from somebody who understands more than I do of what I need and what I want and where I want to go. So that's kind of where I like to see where I come in. I'm like a little extension of your team, because some people, most people aren't quite at the stage where they're ready to hire somebody full time. They just need somebody to lean on as and when. So it might be that I just have like an hour phone call with you and you just ask me one question, we'll talk about it for an hour, and then you're happy and you can move on and you're not stuck anymore. You know, like it's really easy to get stuck when you've got a company. Or we spend the whole day together and, like I say, like go to the shops or go to the factory, or just pull together like a full strategy of whatever it is that you want help with. Or we'll still spend a full day together, but then have the monthly follow-up calls and the email support. So it's kind of, I've just got the three packages, like the hour, the day, or the monthly, and you pick and choose which one works best for you.
Yeah. That's brilliant. And do you find that working with clients over a longer period of time is the most beneficial for, you know, so I'm just thinking of those listening who are thinking, ooh, I think I might want to work with Elizabeth.
Maybe.
Ooh. Do you find that working with somebody over a longer period of time is generally more beneficial, unless they've just got one question and they're just stuck on it? If they're looking to start a brand, I'm kind of going to guess that you can't do that in a day.
You can try, and I can kind of like throw everything at you and you can take it away and do it in your own time. And I love doing the full days, you know, if you can wrap it up all in one. But I always feel a bit funny. I'm like, I don't want to push people into the monthly thing if they don't feel like they need it. But it definitely does work better. Because like I said at the beginning, there's so many stages to setting up a brand, you know, like, you've got the design ideas, but then you've got to actually get somebody to spec them. So like you can be a beautiful illustrator, but a factory won't be able to make a garment from an illustration. They need a line drawing and measurements and reference points. And if you don't know how to do that, you then need to go out and source a designer. And then you need to get the fabric sourcing, and then you need to find a manufacturer, and then go through the production process and do your costings and organize delivery dates and your packaging and your labeling. And it's like, there's so many things that just feel so overwhelming. You don't even know what order to do it in. And sometimes those three of those stages, you actually need to do them all at the same time. You know, like making a roast dinner, you need to be cooking the potatoes and cooking the chicken and boiling the vegetables all at the same time.
Oh, and it's such hard work, and I always have to write down the timings. What time do I put the potatoes in? What time did the chicken go in?
Right, exactly. So if you eat at two, I need to be working backwards. So if you want to launch in September, you need to be working backwards from that. Like, how long does the fabric take? How long does this take? And then that's kind of how you pull together a critical part. So, there's my roast dinner analogy.
Yeah, I love that. And that is so, so true. I mean, anybody who can just throw a roast dinner together that doesn't even, and says, oh, we'll eat at two, but doesn't plan when they need to start cooking. Well, bravo. Bravo to you. Yeah, I have to have a post-it note stuck on the front of the fridge with the timings.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love that. So, what would your kind of top tips be for somebody that is thinking about starting a fashion brand? Do you have kind of three things perhaps that you repeat over and over and over again?
Yes. The first one would be to know why you want to start a fashion brand. If you want to earn some extra money, go and get a job in a shop or something, because you're not going to be making your money back for a little while yet. It's not cheap to start a fashion brand, but people do it because you can make really good money in time. But you know that you've got to know that there's a certain, maybe like 18 months to 2 years, you're going to be looking at breaking even. And from then on, you're going to start making the money. And that's kind of like a very wide generalization, but I just want to make sure that it's not just to make money. And we're in a time now where consumerism is very hot, like everyone's on it, and people are buying less, they're buying more thoughtfully. So there's got to be a reason why you're contributing more clothes to the planet. It might be that, you know, you're using recycled plastic or something, or that you're doing it for charity. So you've got to be working towards something bigger. Like, just selling clothes for fun, that time's done, I'd say.
Yeah. Would you say that it's still a case that, you know, even if you produce, you know, you're kind of not buying into the consumerism and the fact that we are consciously consuming these days? Do you think that there's still the power for brands to take off if they do the right marketing, even if they're not tapping into that particular trend? So, you know, brands that, you know, spend a lot of money working with influencers, and we see it all the time on Instagram, new brands popping out of nowhere, and it's just because they spent an absolute fortune on ads and getting it on celebrities and the Made in Chelsea cast. Do you think that still can work? I mean, I personally think it's like a boom and bust type thing. It's going to peak and then drop, but
that's,
do you think it can work?
It can work, but I'd say it's probably a short-lived, like, get in, get out, sell the company and be done with it. But I know you always talk about growing slowly and sustainably, mm-hmm. and not sort of having those huge peaks of overnight mm-hmm. success, you know, mm-hmm. they're the kind of brands that I want to be working with, is people yeah. who are growing sensibly. You know, it might sound a bit yeah. boring, but actually, if you want some longevity in your business, can you actually afford to quadruple your sales in 3 months? You know, can you actually afford the stock to put into that? Or I don't know, I think it might work this year, maybe next year at a push, but I think after that, this ethical fashion thing is only just starting. This is like the very, very beginning of it. And if you're going to start something from scratch now, and if you want it to have some longevity, you might as well just start the ethical thing now, because trying to work in hindsight will be a lot harder.
Yeah, which makes complete sense. And like, you and I are very aligned in the kind of companies and businesses we work with, because neither of us work with businesses that want to grow really, really fast with the potential of exiting. Like, we don't work with serial entrepreneurs type things. We want to work with passionate small businesses who are really dedicated to what they're doing, and like you say, want to grow sustainably and sensibly, and it's their passion and their livelihood.
Definitely. That's why I want people to have a reason why they want to start, and that goes back mm-hmm. to another book that I read, was called Start With Why by Simon Sinek, and yeah. it's just like the baseline to marketing these days, I think.
It is, yeah.
Starting with a reason why you want to do something. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing I'd say is getting out and meeting people. If fashion is a very, very tiny world, so once you meet mm-hmm. one person, just cling on to them and ask who they're friends with, and then like
a Olympic
trade show. Yeah, exactly. Going to trade shows, going to fabric fairs, like going to panel talks where people in fashion are speaking, and get your foot in that door of fashion, because it's very small, and you meet one person, they've got a network of 80 people, for example, and that person then has got a network. And always saying, like, can you help me with this? If the answer is no, do you know somebody who can? Do you know somebody who can? Do you know somebody who can? And just keep asking that question, and it will take you really, really far.
Love it. It's definitely not a place for introverts that are starting brands who don't want to go talk to people. It's definitely, fashion is very much about who you know.
Yeah, it is. And it's quite sad, really, that I was fresh out of uni, and I remember I'd only been working for like 2 or 3 weeks. And I'm one of these people, when I go in somewhere, I'm not like, hey, babe, how are you? You know, like, I kind of sit back for a little while and just watch how people behave and like who people are and who to talk to. And mm-hmm. my buyer said to me, if you're a wallflower, you're not going to survive here.
No.
I was like, wow, okay. I was like, no, I'm not a wallflower. I'm just like stuffing the place out. But
yeah,
wallflowers don't survive in fashion, and that's
a
horrible, horrible, brutal reality. But you know, I have got more confidence since working in fashion, because you're almost forced down that route. So the other thing I was going to say is, if you don't ask, it's a no. If you do ask, it might be a no, but it might be a yes. But if you don't
and
ask,
that's true to everything.
Yeah,
that is so true to everything. If you don't put yourself out there, how will you know? You can't just be like, I know they're gonna say no. And it's like, well, go get your no then.
Definitely a no.
yeah just go get your no, stick yourself out there. They say no, and we all go, okay, you were right. You were right. But
if they say
you've got
to ask, well, it'll be like behind you going, yay.
exactly.
So yeah, I'd say they're the three things, like network, ask people, well, I guess they're the same kind of thing, but and having a reason why you started.
I think that's great. I really like that. I want to explore a little bit more about the ethical thing. Mm-hmm. I did kind of cover a little bit with Catherine on the podcast about conscious consumerism, but it would be really good to hear from you and how specifically you feel this is relating to fashion. Mm-hmm. For anybody listening who's thinking about developing a fashion brand, or perhaps has a fashion brand at the moment, what are your kind of thoughts and feelings? And I guess, again, some tips for people who are thinking, yeah, I'm aware of this whole ethical thing. Is it a fad? Is it something that I really need to be thinking about? And if so, what kind of things can I start doing now to make a change? Because I'm not going to just go and scrap all my product and go and have it all remade in a different recyclable material. what would you say are the things that people should be thinking about and those kind of changes, and whether or not you think this is a fad or if this is something that is for the long haul now?
Okay, so one of the things is I wrote a blog for your website about how
you
to
did,
make
yes.
brand more fashionable.
I will link to this.
So there's a few things in there, but I try and get the main point across. I read something on Twitter the other day that was like, you don't have to do everything, it's fine. But if everybody does something, then it will take us a really long way. So say you've recently just bought 100 plastic bags to career things in. Don't chuck them, it's fine, but just make a plan as to how you're then going to replace them after that, you know.
Yeah.
Could it be that they're recycled plastic? You know, it's quite hard to career things in something that isn't plastic because obviously they get damaged by the water.
And storage, like a lot of people, having worked in retail, working shop floors and stuff myself, you know, most of us would have had stock rooms in the basement. You've got all your product in plastic in basements, and the last thing you want is pulling open a box and finding everything's got mildew on it.
The smell is like unforgettable.
It really is. We've all been there. But how do you even get around that, like not having stuff in plastic?
Well, something that you could do is say, you know, if you order something and it's just in a cello bag, ask your manufacturer maybe to start putting 5 size smalls in one cello bag rather than everything being individually packed. Like, that isn't necessary.
Yes.
So trying to bulk out that way. You can start looking at using dead stock fabrics rather than buying new fabrics all the time. You know, going to your local fabric shops and having a look at what's already there. Or one girl I work with, she's called Amy Fuchsia. She bought all her fabric in London, and she got home and she unrolled the vinyl and it was all damaged. It had like scratch marks all over it. And she's like, what am I going to do with it? So she put it on her Instagram and was like, what should I do with this? I'm thinking of making a bag or something. You know, it's all damaged. I don't want to throw it away. Every bag will be unique. I'll make about 50 and I'll make it like limited edition because everything will be different.
With battle scars.
And she told the whole story of how it got made over the space of 3 or 4 weeks to her following. And showed her handwriting the labels, you know, this is 1 of 50, 3 of 50, 4 of 50. She showed people about going all the different shapes that she could make and the way the pattern was laid out on fabric, and really pulled her audience into this idea that she was making something out of like dead stock fabric, you know, that wasn't perfect. And she then got people to sign up to her mailing list, saying, I'm going to release the bags on Sunday at 8 o'clock. And they sold out in like 15 minutes after releasing the email, because she'd taken something that was technically ready for the bin and turned it into something cool, and took her whole audience along for the ride as well. And now everybody's got these really cool bags that are all different. And it was just a really cool idea that she took something that was ready for the bin and made it something good.
I love that. So if people are thinking, you know, I've got this fabric and it's damaged or something's happened to it, what
can
could
you
do with it?
Yeah. Or Hermes, you know, like Hermes bags and scarves.
Yeah.
They've got a sub brand called Petit H.
Yeah.
So all the scraps from the scarves, they repurpose it into like, I mean, they do shoelaces for something like £200 or something. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's very reasonably priced, Emma. Very reasonably.
I like the idea of it. So could you take the offcuts of your dresses and make scrunchies out of them, for example?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like zero waste, and how you can do that with fabric. I like the idea of making little things out of scraps. Donating them to local sewing groups. You know, my grandma's friend, she still goes to sewing groups, and I always send her scraps of fabric, and they're so grateful for it as well. Just like, don't throw anything in the bin, I beg of you, like no fabric.
I think that's great.
Yeah, like there's loads of things, but maybe link to the link to the blog.
I will link to the blog post that Elizabeth wrote for Small and Mighty Co. So you can go read some of her top tips on making your brand more ethical and sustainable. What's been the biggest challenge for you so far in the business? Not for you as a business owner, but perhaps the biggest challenge you've come up or the biggest learning you've had with a client. So has there been something that's been thrown to you that you've been a bit kind of like, whoa, this is interesting, not had to deal with this before?
Do you know what? I don't think I have.
Would you like one?
Yeah, no, not really. It's almost like, what you know when I said at the beginning, some brands I could help and some brands I couldn't. The
yes.
brands that I can't help, it usually comes up in that discovery call. And yeah. I'll say, and I'm so honest, like, am I allowed to swear on this?
You can swear.
I'm just like, I'm not a bullshitter, you know. But I never say that I can't, I can do something if I can't. And my skills are so niche. They're in design, sourcing, and a little bit of marketing. And I'll give you like a little crash course on the, how to get your brand out there to start with. And then you can go yeah. and work with somebody from there. But if it doesn't come under those three things, I don't work with them. And yeah. I've turned down clients in the past before as well that just aren't the right fit or I just don't feel like I'd be able to give them the results they need. So I just say no. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I only work with people that I know I can make a change to or that come under those three categories, basically. So, yeah, I guess one of the things I was worried about when I left my job is that I would get people or I was worried about saying I don't know the answer. So now I just work with people who need my specific help, and then I don't have to worry about it. And if they come to me and say, do you know somebody who can help me with this? I can say yes, because I know so many people in the industry. I'm like, yeah, no, that's not me, that's her over there. So like pattern cutting, for example, that's a whole career in itself.
I know it
a little bit, but I definitely don't know how to do it myself. So I'll just say, oh, sorry, that's not really my realm. I would advise you go and speak to this person or this person, and then that, and then I don't have to worry about saying I don't know. I've still helped them, they're working with an expert, and I don't feel like I've shafted anybody either, you know.
Yeah. I think that's really key when it comes to service businesses, like, you know, what you and I do and what everybody in the co does. We're all very specific and we're all in our own lanes. And
yeah.
I think that's also really important for people who are listening, who are thinking, yeah, I want some help, that you are highly unlikely to find one person that can help you with everything because you're getting a jack of all trades, master of none. So you tend to find you have to work with multiple people. And I get exactly the same. You know, people will come to me for marketing help and we'll talk about content marketing, and I do dip into different aspects of their business as well. But then if they start asking me questions around, for example, your area of expertise, I'd just be like, yeah, no. But
yeah.
I can refer you to somebody that can help. And it's the same for you. If somebody then said, oh, so, you know, you're helping me get my brand out there, and oh, what do you think about copy for my website? You'd be like, yeah, that's not my area. But
definitely
it happens.
Not my area.
No, and then that's where it kind of comes from. But I think a lot of people think that they could just work with one person and get everything, and the chances of that happening is highly unlikely, which is why I created the co, really, because you've all got your expertise in different areas and we can all actually work together. If you've got the budget and you want the help, all of us pretty much can work with you in one capacity or another to help you build that business and really get it where it needs to go. But yeah, you can't expect one person to have all the knowledge.
No, and even down to like a bedding company got in touch with me. I was just like, I could do it, but I don't. Mm. I still feel like it's not fashion. It's not fashion. So I just said,
it's not fashion.
Like, that's it. Go and speak to this person.
Fashionable bedwear.
Yeah. So I'm quite specific in the people that I work with.
I think that's good, because that's where your expertise lies, and that means that everybody gets the absolute kind of best out of you, really.
Yeah, and I know
really
that I'll be able to help you, and you will have faith in me that I can help you. Like, it's a very much a two-way thing, that we're both on the same page.
Definitely. And do you work with like a variety of brands in terms of what their kind of retail price points are going to be, from kind of your lower end fast fashion all the way through to kind of your premium luxury market? Or do you have kind of a sweet spot that you enjoy working with, kind of leaning back on your experience of working on high street?
I'd say less of the fast fashion. It was one of the reasons why I left. I worked somewhere before and they were delivering things in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And I just think, oh God, when you're delivering something in 2 weeks, these people that are making it under a lot of pressure. And I went to some of the factories and I just didn't feel comfortable. So I try and work with people who are making a decent profit margin from, but still paying people the right amount, and paying people either minimum wage or working like living wage. Anything below that is obviously a no-go. And pretty much all fast fashion is made below the minimum wage, and it's just not very nice. So I'd say most of the price points are like comfortable, pushing not even like luxury, just
premium.
Premium's a nice word.
Investment pieces kind of thing.
I love that.
Yeah. And I know you're very passionate about British manufacturing as well. Is that something you encourage your clients to do?
Yeah, there's just so many benefits to making in the UK compared to abroad. It's quicker. You can go and see it. You can create content because you can go up there. You create much better relationships with people. There's no time difference. There's no language barrier. You're supporting the UK industry. It's a selling point.
Better carbon footprint.
There is so many benefits. And people always assume that it's too expensive. And I just think, well, it might be, but it might not be. And by the time you've sent it out to China and it's got stuck in customs and you've had to pay like $3,000 to get it through or whatever it might be, has it been that much cheaper? Probably not. And that's just the risk you run working within an area of the world that you might not be that familiar with. So yeah, I'd try it, at least at the beginning, getting it as close to home as possible so you can watch it like a hawk.
That's also key as well, is that, you know, you send it off to China or something, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind a little bit, and you're not going to really know until you get it back. So at least you can oversee the process in the UK, which is
that's a very expensive risk, which may or may not pay off. And I think at least if you're in the UK, even like down to the laws and contracts that you're putting in place with people, you just know that where you stand, that you could go to, you know, I don't know what it's called, the Bureau.
Intellectual Property Bureau.
Exactly, all of those things, you know that you could go to somebody where it's made in China and you got it off Alibaba or India or wherever, you know, it doesn't, I'm just using China as an example, but you don't really know where you stand with that, so just be recommending UK to begin with.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree. I think that's a really good tip. So they are all the questions I have for you, apart from obviously my last question that I ask every guest. Whose story would you like to hear on Small and Mighty Conversations?
Well, I thought it's got to be a fashion person.
Obs.
And it's one of my clients called Olivia Rose. And she's got a brand called Olivia Rose The Label. It's all handmade in Scotland. And she started on Etsy, and there was an influencer who found her on Etsy and asked her for a sample. And from that one person asking her to wear it, I think she wore it then to an event, her brand has gone like insane. It's just she can't keep up with her orders. There is just, it's so busy, and it's all from the power of marketing and sort of people wearing it. And it's just, it's really interesting the way a handmade brand has almost got mainstream. It's a really cool story.
That's amazing. I love that. That's definitely the kind of guest that I want on Small and Mighty Conversations. So thank you for your recommendation, and I love hearing the power of
marketing.
It's just so overlooked, people. Fabulous. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today, Elizabeth. It's been an absolute pleasure talking with you, and I will link everything below, including how people can get in touch with you and, of course, how people can work with you.
Yeah, all welcome. Let me know. My DMs are always open.
Oh, I love that. Slide into Elizabeth's DMs.
Yeah,
slide
in. You're welcome.
Thank you so much. And that was my chat with Elizabeth. I hope you enjoyed today's episode, the final one of season three. As promised, there won't be a year-long break between seasons again, and season four will be hitting your subscriptions really soon. So if you're not already subscribed, please make sure you're subscribed, whether you're on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, wherever it is that you listen to your podcast, so that when season four launches, it will pop straight into your subscriptions. It's totally free. And please do take a couple of minutes to rate and review if you haven't already. It means the absolute world to me. I also love seeing where you listen to your podcast. If you're out on a run, dog walk, on the beach, do take a photo, share it on Instagram, pop it on your stories, tag at Sam Burgess UK and hashtag Small and Mighty Business, and let me know where you listen to the show, because I absolutely love seeing it. Everybody, I've had some fascinating ones. My favourite one last week was somebody jogging to pick up her kids from school whilst listening to a podcast. I mean, that is serious multitasking. But until next time, keep pushing forward. Your next great success is just around the corner.